Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to this work session for the Great River Regional Library Board of Trustees. Can you hear me in, where are they?
Cokato.
I think that's a yes.
Yes.
That's great. We're trying this out. This is something that we couldn't do for actual our meetings, but for work sessions we can do to sites like this. So, kind of fun. So, it's 6 o'clock. I call this meeting to order. And since it's a work session, we're a little less formal, but we do have a guest. So, why don't we go around quickly and do introductions before we start with the Central Minnesota Library Exchange presentation? Why don't we start on the screen? So we've got JC and
can you introduce yourself? Yep.
Okay, great. And why don't we start over there?
Erin Ponsack, Great River Regional Library Director.
Yeah, I saw that.
Breanne Johnson, Communications and Development Coordinator.
George Fiedler, an interested Stearns County resident.
Can you guys hear? Cokato Land, can you hear the people when they're talking? Okay. So, George, why don't you go again?
I'm George Fiedler, a Stearns County interested resident.
I'm Jane Dietz. I'm Jane Dietz, Sherburne County citizen trustee.
I'm Zuri Anjum, Stearns County citizen member.
Mary Everly, Sherburne County citizen member.
Mary Jordan, CMLE director and visitor.
Al Omdahl, Stearns County citizen member.
Lee Lenzmeyer, Stearns County commissioner.
Ed Popp, Benton County commissioner.
Lisa Phoebe, Sherburne County commissioner. So thank you and welcome, everyone. Let's go right on to number 2, Central Minnesota Libraries Exchange presentation. Karen, do you want to tee this up at all?
Sure. So in your packets, there's some background information. I included the family strategic plan. I'm sure Mary will talk about that. I think before I dig into, like, what is a multi-type and the multi-type vision and the statute, it would be helpful to hear from Mary, like, what is CMLE, how does it fit, and then I can maybe fill in some of the gaps and how Great River participates, if that works.
That sounds great. Hi to everyone. Hello to past and current board members of CMLE. Lovely to see you all. So I'm Mary Jordan, and I am the director of the CMLE organization. I've been the director for just over 5 years now, and I've been to your board several times. Thank you for the invitation. So CMLE is what we call a multi-type library system. It's a little bit of a misnomer. We're not a library. We don't do library. I am a librarian, as it happens, though. I've been a librarian for more than 20 years. I've worked in every type of library, including most of my career in public libraries. So, of course, public libraries have a special place in my heart, but CMLE itself, we do a lot of training is kind of our thing, providing assistance to members. We have over 300 members across 12 counties in central Minnesota. And the majority of those members are schools. So I know a lot of you have been involved with your schools, either parents, grandparents, neighbor kids. Several of you I know have been on your school boards. Thank you very much for your service because schools need as much help as they can possibly get. So we do a lot of work with our school libraries, but we also help to serve, you know, the needs of our public libraries, our schools, our academic libraries, and then our special libraries. So special libraries include things like Stearns History Museum has a library, and it's a very nice library. So if you ever need to stop by, their librarian is also a member of the CMLE board this year, and she is our treasurer currently. So that's been really nice. The local jail, the prison here, they have a library. They're one of our members. Centricare Hospital has a library. They're one of our members. So we have a pretty broad breadth of things that we do, people we talk to, and that's our community. We don't do library work. We help the libraries to do their work and to make sure that they're ready to serve their communities. So as part of that, again, what I said, and we'll walk through the strategic plan coming up because our board, our members, everybody spent months just really trying to hone this. But one of the main things that we focus on is training and making sure that our members have some skills that they feel confident. One of the ways that we do that is by offering online education. We offer podcasts that are educational and fun for all of our members and for anyone. And then we work with not only our member libraries, but the large multi-type library system around the state. CMLE is one of seven different multi-type systems in the state of Minnesota. We have a map in your materials. I'm sure you've looked at it, but we'll walk through and look at that too. So let's take a quick look at the strategic plan. I've been with CMLE, as I said, for just over 5 years. So this is the second strategic plan process that I participated in. Our board looked at results of user surveys that we sent out to members. We found material, other ideas that we might be interested in, and they spent a lot of time narrowing things down, really trying to focus us in the direction that they want us to go. It's a long process. It's a lot of chatting. You know. It's a lot of thinking about it. But I think we've ended up with a pretty good plan. So our mission and our vision statement have not changed. We did change this pretty dramatically in the last strategic plan 3 years ago. I think this does reflect what we do now. And then we did set four new goals or four new areas of service that we provide. And so information sharing, education and training, providing networking opportunities, and grant making. So we take all of these things very seriously. You may have heard there's a global pandemic happening. It's been awkward. Sometimes things are challenging. But we've been able to really stay in contact with our members and provide different kinds of support during all of this. So information sharing. This includes not only giving information to our members. We have articles that appear on our website every day. We participate in social media every day. We send out a newsletter to our members every single Friday. If you're interested and you're not already getting it, please let me know because, my goodness, I would be happy to sign you up. So every Friday that goes out to almost 800 people around mainly Minnesota, but in other parts of the country also. So we share all of that, and I'm always available to talk with members. I've just actually spent quite a bit of time over the last couple of days talking with one of my school members who's having a challenging administrative issue in her school. She doesn't really have other resources for who should she reach out to. So she talks with me. I give her thoughts from the profession. It kind of helped to bolster her. We also offer, and I have at different times been to meetings with library staff, especially if you're alone in the library. Most of our members are alone, just to make sure that they have somebody who can help give that library voice. So we do that. We do education and training. And as I said, we have online classes that are available currently at no cost. We are building more training that will be available not only to our library staff around Minnesota, but we are also working toward building programs that would be library appropriate but would overlap with teachers who are in different areas. So potentially like English teachers, history teachers who would need to be using the library on a regular basis, As you know, all teachers in Minnesota are required to have a certain number of professional development hours. So if we can do something to kind of help that, there's a real shortage in those classes. So we're working on that. We do a lot of in-person classes, not when we're having a pandemic. We do online. We do a lot of different kinds of things to make sure that we're reaching the topics that our members are interested in. So in addition to, I'm very involved in the larger national profession, so I understand the important issues that are happening across the profession of librarianship, but I also try to not only speak with our members frequently, but also we do periodic needs assessments, and I ask, so what do you need now? What's important to you in your library, in your school, with your building? What do you need? We do provide regular network opportunities. So 2 weeks ago, we had a member annual meeting, and we did meet at Stearns History Center, and that was very fun because our members came. They could talk with us. They got to try our virtual reality kits that we loan out to members. We talked with them about grant programs, and then they got to go see the museum. So I think everybody who came had a good time. Oh, I'm sorry. I also gave them bagels because every meeting is better with a little food, right? So we are working on an online system of networking and discussion, and it's called Discord. So if you participate or your kids or your grandkids participate in video gaming or podcasting, it's very big in those areas, but it's rapidly, especially with the pandemic, it's rapidly starting to reach into all areas where people need to have a forum to discuss. It's free, it's easy to work with. We're setting up some things that I think will be very helpful for our members. One example that we're going to be using there, the multi-type systems have banded together and are paying for any library staffer in the state of Minnesota to attend two different three-week training sessions through an organization, the Library Journal, a very prestigious journal in our profession. So they've been doing this really interesting training. Today was the first day of training in collections. And, we've learned a lot of really interesting things that we'll be able to pass on to our members. We will use our online system through CMLE to give people a forum for after that training is over, they can join us. And they can be in this chat, and they can discuss things, and they can share videos, and they can share links, and they can share ideas. Mm. We can keep their conversation going. So that's important to us. And then our fourth main goal is grant making. And I 100% have to say thank you so much to the board because this was a board idea. This was not me pushing them into anything. Okay, I will tell you, you know my board members. I'm not pushing them into anything. But they came up with this on their own. So in the difficulties of the pandemic with the schools, one of the big needs that the schools had was, for example, kids went home on Friday, didn't come back on Monday, didn't come back for 3 weeks. All those books that the kids took home, a big chunk of them never came back. So every one of our school members reported just phenomenal losses. And I mean, what can you do? You just can't get that back. So our board decided to help provide assistance directly to the members. So we created an extended mini-grant program. In a regular year, we provide mini-grants of up to $300 that the members can buy materials, bring speakers, whatever they might need. We can help with that. This year, the board voted to provide up to $1,000 per member. We spent a little over $20,000. And each member got a chance to, you know, replenish their book collection, to try and buy some technology that might be useful to help the schools quickly respond to, to the needs that they have. So that was wonderful. So we're doing that for this semester, this fall semester right now. So we're in the middle of soliciting for more grant applications. We're focusing very much on providing assistance to schools that meet certain criteria for the free and reduced lunch program to make sure that we're reaching out, especially to the schools that are serving our students who have the most need. So that's happening. We're getting that underway. Jane was on that committee. Hi, Jane. Would you like to be on our committee again?
Thank you.
Thank you. So nice to have volunteers. and then we have another board member, our treasurer. We have myself, my colleague Angie. We have a woman who is teaching school library master's program at St. Cloud State, and she's also been a school librarian. And then on the committee who hands these out, we also have a revolving member from a different school. So different schools come on and they talk about like the need that they have and what they see in these applications. It's, I think, been a great learning experience for all of us. And it's so good. We've had so many nice messages back from them. Everybody who gets a grant, they write a little report. They send us pictures. They send us little videos. All of that goes onto our website and then is shared with the whole community of 300 libraries. It's been wonderful. So anyway, we have a variety of other things that we are going to be working on for the next 3 years over the course of our strategic plan, but that's kind of our background and where we are with what we're doing. Questions so far? Sure.
I know nothing about...
It's okay. I'm here.
Ellie, a lot of people here do, so I just have a couple questions and an
sure.
observation. First question would be, where does your funding come from? And the second question would be, who do you report to, the organization? Do you report to somebody?
Sure. So a variety of answers to both of those. So the majority of our funding is provided through not exactly a grant from the state library, but through the state library services. We apply every year. We fill out the application. We tell them what we're going to do. They review it. We're granted the money. The state funds... the state appropriates, I should remember the number. It's a little over $1 million for all 7 multi-type systems. We split that among ourselves. There's a formula that the state library has, and this is probably similar to how you guys split the Krepsla money. But that it's based on everybody gets a small chunk. Then there's a factor for what your geographic size is. And then there's a factor for how much population you serve. I was really hoping that we were going to have a big bump here after the census. And we ended up getting, I think, $20 more a year. Kind of a bummer there. We are also, we have been doing a small amount of money that we get like through Amazon for links that we give through our podcasts. And one of the things that our current board chair is discussing is the potential of trying to do some fundraising. We're a 501c3 organization, so people could make tax-deductible donations to us. That's not really something that we've explored during my time. I think it's happened in the past, but anyway, it's something that we're considering for the future. Oh, and then so we're supervised by our board. So our board has... 4 library members, so 1 representative of each type, public, special, academic, and school. They're elected by their own little groups, and then all the school libraries elect a school library person and a backup. And then we also have members from your board and then members of our board from the ECRL library system. Not exactly, sort of like Krepsla and Great River, we're not exactly supervised by the state library, but we're not supervised. They provide guidance, they provide the leadership, they provide the funding. So, of course, I mean, we pay very close attention to any restrictions, any guidelines that they have, suggestions that they have. They're very helpful. Did I answer everything that you asked?
Yeah, and so my next comment would be, this is not a criticism.
Sure.
So on your goals, your sub-bullets on your goals, I look at them as objectives.
Sure.
And on some of them, you don't say when you're going to do it or how many times you're going to do it. So how do you measure success? You understand what I'm saying?
I do. I absolutely do.
For example, it says update website to provide most current information. Well, do you update it every month or every 6 months? I mean, how do you know that you're successful in that objective, that you finished it?
Right. This was actually a discussion that we have had in our board and in our meetings several times about trying to make it a little bit more precise without, I think, being too... We're trying to also be reflective of the fact that our last strategic plan just went out the window, not only because of the pandemic, but because right after we turned this in the strategic plan, we got a major grant from the state to have these VR kits, and all of our programming had to shift to that. So I think what we've finished here is not as precise and detailed goal-wise. The goals are not as smart as they could be, but they're giving us enough guidance that we'll be able to provide that kind of reporting back at the end of this, that we have achieved it or not. One other goal that we're working through is, again, our current board chair is Rhonda
Kiesman.
Thank you. From she's the dean of the library. My brain just went blank. We're a small library community. We all know each other. But she's the dean of the libraries at St. Cloud State. She has an extensive background in evaluation and in assessment. And so one of the things that she wants us to be accomplishing during the life of this strategic plan, and we discussed this in our board meetings, is to work on setting some very solid benchmarks that not just for the course of this strategic plan, but that we could be achieving and we could be measuring ourselves against for the next whatever period of time. So, yeah, I think more precision is coming, and we're trying to be a little flexible, a little realistic.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions or comments? Or any of the board members that serve want to add anything? This is a piece that I've been on this board now almost 5 years.
I've lost track.
Something like that.
Seems longer.
For you or me, Lee. But this is a piece that I think our board has a hard time getting our head wrapped around.
Sure.
Tell me if I'm speaking out of turn, people. But
you're exactly right, because I'm exactly at the same place here.
And
it's like, okay, is it a part of us? Is it above us? Is it... Where does it fit in the chain that we are dealing with? And that's the part that I'm still confused about.
This is how kind of ignorant I feel. Are we a member?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I should know that, right?
And it might be helpful to look at page 9 on your packet, because this is where the origin of multi-types starts. So multi-type systems were established in statute about the same time that regional public library systems were, a little bit after. And the vision was, at that time, to develop cooperative sharing of resources across the state. And at that time, physical resources was the primary thing that was lent. We did not have statewide interlibrary loan when multi-type systems came to be. So they set out in statute how these systems were to be put together. And there used to be more of them. But if you look on the map on page 7, page
5.
Mm-hmm. There's currently 7 multi-type systems. And what's happened over time is some of these systems in the federated regions, so federated means you have a regional library system and then city and county libraries underneath it, operating independent in a lot of ways, those places with contiguous boundaries have actually merged in some way with their library system, their public library system. So in Arrowhead, it is a completely merged board with the regional public library system. And they do a lot of the things that Mary says across all library types. Down in Selco Cells, which is in the southeastern corner of the state, it's actually a merged system, but not sells contracts for services with their regional public library system. So it's a shared boundary and a shared system, but they have a very large board, and they actually operate completely as a nonprofit. Their staff are not para-eligible. They've totally stepped aside from being a government entity in a lot of ways. And then TDS down in the Mankato area is also a merged system, but they are all federated systems. So they don't operate with one budget like Great River does. Great River has one budget for all 32 libraries across all six counties. All the staff work for Great River. Nobody works for Rochester Public or Goodhue County or anything like that. They all work for Great River. So in CMLE, we share boundaries for CMLE with East Central Regional Library, which is also a consolidated system. CMLE is the only multi-type that shares two consolidated systems. So it makes it very unique because they're technically only partners with two public libraries because as an entity, there's only two. And so it makes it a very different dynamic. But by statute, we have to have members on their board. And that's where the alignment we've been trying to achieve for the last several years has been difficult. When I first came on as director, none of the board members on CMLE were members of the Great River Board. Some of them had been board members in the past, but there was a complete separation from where CMLE's work was and Great River's work. There was not a lot of collaboration. When Mary came on, we tried really hard to change some of that. So if you listen to the podcast, I know a lot of our staff are on there. Like, we've been trying to support as CMLE has moved into the new realm. Like, they're the only multi-type doing podcasts. So it's their mission is slightly different than all the other multi-types, just like all other regional public systems work different than Great River. So I think one of the challenges is because it's an 11-member board, and by statute, Great River has to have so many members on that board, we've been trying to appoint Great River board members to keep alignment between the two systems as much as we can. But we've found that it's not really possible. That's part of the reason we appointed Dorothy Kirsten last month to the CMLE board as a citizen member, knowing that Melissa Fee, our Great River board member, recommended her. She was heavily involved with the Kimball Library, has close Great River connections, and was a media specialist before her retirement. So fits with the mission of CMLE. But we could, within the CMLE bylaws, if we wanted to go here, actually downsize the number of citizen members from Great River on the CMLE board and still meet the statutory requirements. Right now we appoint five citizen members, and we could appoint three, and it would still align with what the statute says we have to do. So that's one option we could explore if we want to. I think the challenge for CMLE has been the rotating seat of board members, and I'm just speaking as someone who just came back on, but it's hard to maintain governance of an organization when you don't know if you can have a quorum and you don't know if the board member is going to be gone by the next time you have a meeting. In the case of Mahado Ali, I mean, she didn't make it to our board meeting. She got appointed vice president at the CMLE board meeting. Now they're down a board member and an officer as a result. So I'd like to see the CMLE board stabilize a little bit. You know, it's not up to us to decide whether CMLE should exist. That's already set out in statute, and we've already talked with the state library about where we'd like to see our multi-types long-term, and at least in how the Great River mission fits. For those of you who remember that conference call at the beginning of the pandemic, one of the things our concern was, why is Great River involved in the governance of CMLE? It's a lot of time and energy for us, and it doesn't seem like it fits. And that question never really got answered, but it was posed to the Department of Education last March, well, 2 Marches ago. So know that that question is out there, but that gives you some context. I think it's important for you to understand because we have another CMLE seat that's open. I know Ed's on the CMLE board now. Lee's been on it in the past. Mary's been on it the longest. Jane's been on a long time. And I was CMLE board chair when Mary started There's a public librarian seat on the CMLE board in addition to the Great River and East Central seats. So Carla Lydon, the director of East Central, and I actually share that seat as the two representatives from each region who can fill the seat. So right now, Great River technically has six board members on an 11-member board for CMLE. And just to give you a scope of the budget, it's $170,000,
which
seems like a lot of oversight for not a lot of money, at least in the scope of Great River's operations.
So just to clarify in my mind, these seven regions exist because of state statute?
Yes. That's correct.
So. And then so is it an unfair question to say, what is the value added of that organization to our library? Is that an unfair question to ask?
I can answer that a little bit. You know, I went on the board pretty, I don't know what you'd call blinded. I had the same thoughts you did, George. And once I got there, and then I had a little bit better of an insight because my wife is the media specialist library person up at Royalton, or technology and media person. And I started talking about the CMLE, and she starts talking, oh, I get that letter every week, you know. And so I took a little more interest in it. And they do have a niche that they fill. I will agree with that. They have a niche that they fill within our school systems as far as needs and communications that we probably don't have in the Great River. So I think that part is good because basically when you get down to it, that's where we need to start, is in the school systems, you know, in order to be, to get them interested or whatever. So I guess my, in what have I been on, 2 years, 1 year?
I don't know. Time is weird.
Yeah, we do have things squared away because it was complicated with another meeting that I had scheduled that Wednesday, so we took care of that. It is complicated to what they do, but there is a niche there. There is something that has some value, I believe, for the little amount of money that they get. And, you know, I sit as the finance on the finance part of it. And we went out and did some of that. And I know some of the schools that got the $1,000 were well appreciated. So, and where they wouldn't have got it without the CMLE.
Appreciate it. I'm learning.
Yeah. Well, and I think, and thank you very much for Ed for the kind words, and thank you. I mean, all of our board members from Great River have been lovely. We've been very appreciative. But I think you bring up what a good example of the difference between a public library and between CMLE.
Yeah.
So a public library in relation to a school, whatever school that we have right here, a public library might serve the students, might serve the teachers, might serve principals. All of those people are part of a public library's community. I don't do any of that. I do nothing. I don't give people books. I don't give people, well, for the most part, I don't give people reference advice. I do none of that. What I do is we are a support organization. The only person in a school that I support is the media specialist in the school. I give that media specialist skills, training, potentially a little bit of money every now and then. And whatever kind of backup might be useful, VR kits, to help them. And then they do library work. That's the distinction. We're not a library. We're the support. So we're kind of the backup.
So I got a question for Mary that I should know and I don't. So my wife's been going to this deal at St. Ben's. Is that part sponsored by CMLE or it's like for diversity, inclusion, and all that?
It's probably not, but is she going to a training program for 3 weeks?
It's three different. She went once in the summer. She just went once now, and she got one more time to go.
That's not us, but I do know it, and that's something that's something outside from
anyway,
us.
Anyway, the school asked her to go because
right. It is. It's really interesting. One of the things that I really enjoy about CMLE, and I've been pretty vocal about how much I love my job. I love the libraries. I love getting to talk with everybody. I'm a very enthusiastic person. But that opportunity to do so many different things, to help in so many different ways. I've worked in academic libraries, public libraries, special libraries. I've worked with school libraries. I've consulted with public libraries and other libraries across the country I've been a professor of library science for master's degree programs for about the last 15 years. But this is the first time that I've been able to sit down and really connect with my members, talk with them, provide that direct help. It's been really great. And I mean, I think it's slow. We're building slowly, but I think we're starting to make some good differences for our community. And that's, our community is the libraries, and that's what we're here to do.
So we're going to need to wrap this up. I'm watching the time. Zuria, did you have something?
I just wanted to know, what is the commitment for being on the board?
It's a quarter.
Lifetime commitment.
Lifetime. Okay. Yeah. And you have to give us your firstborn.
Yeah.
And your autograph.
And your autograph.
That is going to be a requirement. I'm going to have to tell you.
Yeah. Our board generally meets
four times a year, unless we have some board members are on special committees or volunteer again to do special things. We try not to make it terribly onerous to have to be part of the board, because I understand you're already doing this. Again, I have a lot of experience with boards and being on boards, being part of boards. So we don't want to make it too onerous, but I don't want it to just be some fluff that has no value to you. I mean, I feel like our board, our organization, in addition to having such a very pitifully small budget, is me. I'm the only full-time employee, and my colleague, Angie, who is a three-quarter-time employee. That's it. So our board very genuinely does provide help, assistance, advice, thoughts. I think it's a meaningful board to be part of, and the members can speak to that, and maybe you can even wait till I'm not here if you want to say whatever you want to say. But I want it to be a meaningful experience, but I don't think it's terribly onerous.
So do you meet on set dates or times?
We do. We meet September, December, March, and June. We meet on the second Wednesday of the month, and we just switched it from 12:30 to 1, right?
Till Friday, too.
Yeah, I thought it was Friday.
We did meet on a Friday, and officially we are still meeting on Wednesdays because the board did not vote at that meeting to change to Friday. On Friday.
But you took a survey, right?
We did. We moved. We moved.
I did the survey.
That one meeting.
But you lost.
Yeah, you might
have
lost.
Sorry. So let's, you guys figure out the schedule. Okay, that can take a long time.
It does.
I am interested, so if you could give me some more information, I would really appreciate
that's fantastic.
Can I just ask a quick question?
My email address is
I'm sorry to speak. Last time I was yelled at for not speaking.
You've never talked, so yes, Al has a question.
I'm just curious. Go ahead, Al. Our school district has been losing media specialists. They eliminated that position at the middle and high school. What can schools do to, I mean, who would you contact then?
Oh, absolutely. So this is a frequent thing that I work with, is especially once the quarantine started, our school media people started dropping like flies. I mean, I'm not kidding when I tell you half of the emails that I had contacted in schools, they were dead. The emails were gone. Those people were gone. So that's been upsetting. So I have worked with a variety of different schools across our system to try and help them with some advocacy programs. How successful is this? It's a nationwide trend that schools are not always seeing the value of having a trained media specialist in the school, someone who can provide information literacy training, someone who can provide digital literacy training, somebody who can, I know this seems crazy, buy good books for the library. That's a thing. We do that. But there's so much more. There's programming, there's materials, there's services. And so we are trying to do more to get in touch with schools. In fact, this is one of our things that, again, our new chair of our board was discussing. We should start potentially having a group who might be interested in talking with school boards to try and help the school boards understand the value of that media position. Libraries are not just some little casual toss-off thing. They're important. Every research study that I have seen over the last more than 15 years shows that kids who graduate from schools with a licensed media professional, not only do they do significantly better on ACT and SAT, They have a higher ability, a higher rate of going to college. If they don't go to college and they move directly into the workforce, they're more successful in the workforce. Need to be getting this word out.
Yeah,
so,
and I think, Mary, this group would definitely agree with that. We're all invested in that. So Al is with Albany Schools, correct, Al?
Yes.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
Maybe you could connect.
And I am with, well, I'm not officially with Sartell
right.
School, but I'm working a lot with Sartell School Superintendent.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So diversity and inclusion and all those areas.
If there's literally anything that as yep. we connect with these people, we've been to all of the schools, all the school libraries in Albany. In fact, my colleague lives in Albany. So we've taken kind of a special interest in trying to get in there, and we haven't been able to lately. But if there's anybody that you know in schools who might be interested in just talking a little bit, maybe hearing a little bit about the value of the library, I will literally go anywhere, anytime. I'm happy to talk. I'm sorry, I'm trying to shut up because I know I'm past time.
That's okay.
Can I just say one more?
Jane.
One more quick comment. CMLE is like a layered cake, lots of layers. And CMLE is just one layer. We never know what we're going to get, if it's chocolate, vanilla. But they're just there to help, and the whole cake comes out, and it really helps people, students do better. And we do evaluate Mary's, back to George's comment, we do evaluate Mary once a year on how she's done on these goals. And so we do evaluate how she's been doing. And we did try to hire someone to go to the schools and make quick contact with them, and we weren't able to find anybody to take that position.
It was during the early days of the quarantine, too, right as schools were starting. So I think that may have been an issue. But, yes, that was something the board felt strongly.
And a lot of the media specialists are retiring. We're going to lose a really good one off our board. Bethany is going to be retiring.
I'm devastated.
They don't want to deal with it. But I think Mary does a great job.
Well,
great.
I like your explanation much better than Karen's.
Well, for me, anything that has to do with cake usually works.
Yeah,
I'm there.
Or bagels.
You know, add some good buttercream and we're there. So I think this was helpful. I really appreciate that you came and spent time. Anyone on our video chat line here or whatever this thing is called?
Oh. Hey, Cocato.
It's been a long day for me, you guys. I'm like punchy.
We value you too.
Yes, we love Cocato. Anything?
No.
Okay.
Well, and thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. And again, thank you to everyone who has volunteered to be on our board, who will volunteer to be on our board in the future. Your service genuinely is appreciated. If you have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me anytime. And let me just put in a small plug. The podcast, Reading with Libraries, that's the one that many members of the Great River staff have been on. And let's see, I think next week we are talking with a guy who is involved. He's the director of an organization called Move in Libraries. We just had a woman on who is in charge of the citizen science program to talk about citizen science in schools and how citizen science can be a larger part of what kids do. So, please subscribe, listen, hit that like button, and I will go and leave you alone. Thank you so much today, guys.
Thank you, Mary. Okay. Our other items, we might have to...
I can be quick.
Go through quickly.
Thanks, Mary.
2021 Regional Sustainability Plan Progress and Statistics, page 11 in your packet.
So this report is something we normally would have put in the November packet, but since we were having an October work session, I thought I'd move it here just for the interest of time for next month. If you remember, this was our one-year strategic plan, GAP plan, that we passed last year to try to address the issues that were arising at the time, like how do we get back into the library, how do we support people in at-home learning, how do we make sure that we have continuity operations between staff. And you can see the progress that we've made in the third quarter, which is through the end of September. I think more interesting than the narrative are some of the key metrics. And we've been using 2019 kind of as a benchmark year because 2020 stats were wonky, to say the least. But so what we haven't been able to achieve yet is kind of that flattening out of the borrower numbers. And to remind you, the borrower number is how many people have an active library card and have used it once in the last 3 years. So it's a three-year cycle as that number ages through. And what it's still doing is declining on a month-over-month basis by a few hundred people. So we're hoping we can get that back. We've been trying to fix that for a while, and that's one piece that's been difficult to achieve. In the later pages, though, you can see how that looks different at the local level. Circulation is about at 85% regionally, but what's really substantially changed since 2019 is the amount of circulation attributed to juvenile materials. That's a couple of reasons, I think. This is my theory. One, we went fines free on juvenile materials in mid-2019. Two, as COVID hit, people switched to digital. That was largely adult users. That's my theory. Because if you were at home, you were checking out ebooks, you might have learned how to use Libby, you're probably not going back. If you used to listen to books on CD and you finally figured out how to download an audiobook on your phone, you're probably not going back to the discs. So some of that circulation may not come back. But it's shifted. You can see the digital library users, the new people signing up for the digital library are still at a slightly faster pace than 2019. So that growth is still continuing. It's not as fast as last year, but last year was a banner year. And you can see digital library checkouts have actually exceeded this point last year. So we are seeing strong growth continuing in that digital usage. Internet usage is using a computer in the library. That has not come completely back. We don't know that it will. Part of it is people got their own devices over the last year. Part of it is we added print-to-go right before the pandemic. And print-to-go allows people to actually print something from their phone at the library, which means they don't have to sign on to the library computer to print at the library. So some of this is because the usage has changed, not necessarily something we're going to recover. But it's something to look at in terms of where are we at from 2 years ago. If you look at page 14, you can see the total borrowers by library and how that's changed since the beginning of the year. The two outliers here are Kimball, which has a brand new library, and we were expecting growth, and we are seeing it, and St. Michael. St. Michael is seeing a substantial amount of growth in that community. Michael Potter, a couple years ago, told us it was coming. It is here. And like their summer reading program statistics exceeded everybody else's in the region as well. So there's a lot of growth happening in Wright County, and that's where you're seeing it is those two locations. Howard Lake, shout out to Sarah Cuevisto, who's also attending remotely in Cokato. She managed to get more people in Howard Lake as well. And I think part of that is there was a lot of awareness raised when the library was closed 2 years ago due to mold, and there's a lot of more awareness coming from that new library project. So I think that's part of it. And Sarah works really, really hard. If you look at the next page, you can see some of that as well. Like, she is really rocking it in terms of number of new borrowers in both of those locations in Cokato and Howard Lake. She has mastered merchandising, and so if you look at the circulation pages for those libraries, you can see some of that as well. And there are other coordinators in our region like Sarah who have really kind of figured out the secret sauce in those smaller communities, and that's where the most growth has come this year. We are seeing locations like Buffalo and Elk River finally starting to recover, but I think as things are closing down again a little bit, that's impacting activity physically in the library. So I don't know if there are other questions you'd want me to talk about from there, but those were the highlights when I was putting this together.
Questions?
Yeah, Karen, can you go on page 12?
Yep.
Objective number two, this has to do with DEI. Yeah. The last bullet on there, you're going to review job descriptions and hiring processes. Can you talk to us about what would that mean in respect to DEI?
So we've contracted with Filson Partners, who's Huda Ibrahim here in town. She's a local person. She was the one. We actually went out to look for a couple of companies to do this work for us. They're going to be taking a look at the jobs and seeing what it is that might be a barrier, whether it's education level, whether it's the way the job description is listed. Like maybe the way we talk about tasks isn't easily translatable. Maybe the jargon in the job description is a barrier. And take a look at how we can improve our recruitment. They've done this for other companies like Microbiologics, so we're hoping they can apply that same lens to some of our job descriptions. One of the things we're not sure about as we go through this is we're a government entity, so a lot of our hiring practices are set up, you know, like veterans preference, for example, is not something we can work around. So are there barriers within our hiring process, the way we post positions, where we post positions, how we advertise? What are things that could improve our recruitment as we go forward?
But this wouldn't be doing anything with quotas, would it?
No, we're not allowed to do that.
Thanks.
Any questions or comments? Okay.
I've got Brianne here with me, but I told her I'd walk through this quickly. I think it's kind of hard to see, but on the top of page 20, the most important thing is the really gray out stuff. So there's an asterisk that says carried over from the 2018 to 2021 fundraising plan. There's a double asterisk from our new strategic plan. And then there's a squiggly line that came from the SWOT analysis that we did with the Fund Development Committee and the Leadership Support Team. We did a SWOT analysis with each group. So our fundraising plan that we're currently under was put together by Library Strategies in 2018. We actually hired a consultant to do a needs analysis, figure out what's realistic. This builds on the bones of that plan. And if you look at the very beginning, Sue Wilson was the lead consultant from Library Strategies who met with a number of us who were here at that time and said, realistically, the library could probably get to the point of raising $400,000 to $500,000 a year if you follow these steps of growth. What's interesting is at the time I'm like, well, that's lovely. My ideal goal would be, could we someday raise more money than we collect in fines and go fines free? And I really didn't think we'd achieve any of that in 3 years, but we hired Brianne and COVID hit and all kinds of opportunities walked through our door with some of the challenges. And that was surprising to me. You can see what our actual totals were here. Using the same metrics that Sue used in terms of growth, like average gift at total number of donors under each category, it is possible we could hit that $450,000 mark by 2025 if our growth continues on the pattern it's been on. Hard to say if that's possible. Last year was a banner year with fundraising, but we also have a really great opportunity with Fines Free happening this year as well. So just know that that's kind of where the information came from that's in this plan. I can go into more detail if you want me to. Our intent is to review this with the Fund Development Committee tomorrow morning, and then it will be put in front of the board for approval in November to replace, because the current strategic plan and fundraising plan only goes through the end of this year. So this would be what we would be doing starting next year. I think it was like $8,000. They did.
When I see something like this, and I know the in-house expertise, it makes me wonder, from within, without paying attention to somebody else, to tell us what we need with all the experts like Karen, that really knows, he isn't out to that.
Well, Mike, if I may, we did not hire a consultant for this update. When we hired the consultant, that was in 2018, and that was before we hired Breanne. We actually had a vacancy, and we were trying to determine whether fundraising was something that was going to be continuing as part of the Great River operation, and what would be the appropriate staffing if we did that. I would add to this under that comment, if we get to the point of raising $450,000, we might need more staffing to support this. And for context, we eliminated a 40-hour position in communications and fund development last year because they have streamlined so much stuff. So we've actually increased fundraising and reduced staffing. And there's a tool that we've been using for free this past year that I would like to bring forward in the November meeting to approve from the surplus $10,000 to support what's called Library Aware. I will talk more about that in November in the interest of time, but know that this technology tool helps the staff do the work rather than having a staff member produce a lot of content from scratch. Is that accurate? It's doing a lot of things for us, but I think in order to keep our capacity focused on the fundraising and not producing promotional materials as much, it would be helpful for us to support that with a technology solution at the November meeting. So. Preview. It's a preview.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
Just a clarification on the Grants Foundation support. For 2020, it says $55,288. But then for 2021, actuals projection as of 9/21, it's a pretty significant jump on 146,444. How did that come about?
That was the ARPA funding that came through. So we have to record it as grants, and that wasn't a grant. We did apply for it, but it was something we didn't have to work too hard to get.
And how much was that?
$111,000, I think. So,
yeah.
Yeah, one-time money.
Yeah.
Did you have something?
Yes, and no. I've forgotten it. I'll think of it in 1 second. Go on.
But you just really like it. It's spot on. My other boards now.
Right.
And how we're creating a culture.
It's a public meeting. You can be here.
More than money, it's being able to illustrate and show the impact in your community. That's the most important part, and that's how you can collect a lot more cash. So, I just was in another little another board that I'm on that we did a whole little workshop with our board on culture to have all staff so that all the board members would feel comfortable being ambassadors to ask for money and to share our story and be able to give your 30-second elevator speech of why libraries are important in communities, that we should each have that little stump speech in our back pocket. The development director at this entity at Central Minnesota Mental Health, Kelly Doss. Mary, did you think
well, first of all, thank you for your comment because I think, you know, we shouldn't focus on fundraising because then people see dollar signs rolling through their head and. I mean, it's more about philanthropy, as you said. And number two, I do like this plan. I think it's a good one. I just want to be sure that we don't forget about the regular, small, annual, repeat donors, which is what we heard from another person who came into our committee. You know, $25, $35, $50 every year for 20 years, that's important. And back to the gift, the bequest that we received. No one knows her, knew her. You know, that came out of the blue. She must have had some connection, some positive influence somewhere along the way. And I don't know how we cultivate that, but if we can figure that out, I think we'll be good.
Recognizing that those $25 donations are as important as our $2,500 donations.
Right.
You're going to get a lot more of those, you know, and just that constant contact with those people. And that it's not the only time they hear from us is to ask cash. So, with that, you have your envelopes and your packets. We'd love to have 100% board participation because that's a strong message to give to your staff and to your community. So to 5 to 500, 5,000 I should have said, right?
Brianne has a little pitch that came from one of our major donors on the Fund Development Committee.
Yes. So Mark Thielen is a major donor for the library and is also a part of the Fund Development Committee. And last year, our board really talked about wanting to see staff participation. And so he challenged the staff last year with a matching gift up to $1,000. Well, the staff really came through and brought enthusiasm in giving, where we ended up telling Mark that we surpassed it, and he was like, okay, let's go up to $2,000 for staff. And again, back to what Lisa was saying, we've really been working to build a culture of philanthropy and talking about the importance of where these fundraised dollars are going and what we are able to do with things such like going fines free. And so Mark was disheartened by the lack of board participation last year, and so is this year challenging the board to a matching gift challenge. However, he has not said that it is up to a certain amount. He and his wife, Anne, have said that they will match up to $1,000, but after the board gives $1,000. So, as I'm looking at his email, he says if the board gives $800, he won't yet give. If the board gives $1,400, he will give $400. Etc. So the board in total gave in total $900 last year. And so he wants to try to challenge the board to participate more. So obviously, again, it is a challenge to build excitement and participation within the board. The biggest thing, though, is solely having participation. Last year we had, I think, only half of the board participate.
42%.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. And so that really is the biggest part in being able to see that the board supports fundraising initiatives as we've been looking at our next fundraising plan, as we're talking on going fines free. All of these, none of these things would be possible without support. And as leaders of the regional library system, that is where I'm inviting you, no matter dollar amount, to show your support. And this is also something that our staff are really looking at. So as they stepped up last year, we are challenging you to step up this year as a board.
So he will, any dollar over $1,000, he'll match.
Correct.
Got it. So if it's $12, he'll match 12. If it's another 1,000, he'll match another 1,000.
Correct. Yes.
So that's very generous, and tell him thank you. We really appreciate that. And I just, I want to get our board participation up. So, Al.
Karen, I had asked you about the per diem question. Did you find out anything on?
Yes. So for those of you who have decided to waive per diems, it is still because we posed the per diem challenge as well at the last board meeting. It is possible to still claim those per diems and donate them back to the library as part of this challenge if you wish to. We don't have the ability to take dollars from operating for per diems, for board per diems, and put them in the fundraising bucket. You as an individual would have to make that decision to do that. So I have some per diem slips here if you want to do that. And Amy gave me the list of who claimed and who didn't claim over the last year. So if you have questions about whether you have per diems, you might be able to claim. I have that information along. So, yes, thank you for the question.
Another member has talked to me because they said similar. Al mentioned earlier that that's their donation. They've given up their per diem, and that's very generous, and we appreciate that. But take your per diems and then write the check out to, choose how many per diems you want to take for that year, perhaps, and then in turn turn that back in for your donation. It's just a paper trail that we need to...
The auditor requires. And we intentionally keep the fundraising dollars separate from the operational budget. We don't want to bank on having that money. You never know what changes. So that's why it's been held separately from the and it's accounted separately. It allows the year-end campaign to cross budget years, and so it is a separate fund.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for the question.
I think that's a great goal. We should have had greater participation from the board last year. But this year, we should be just about halfway to that 1,000 pretty quick, I hope. And whether it's a per diem or you just write the check or whatever, it doesn't matter. As long as we show board support, I think that's the important thing. Thank you.
Lee had a question.
Lee.
Last year I didn't contribute either. We only had 42% participation on the board, and I brought up the idea of contributing the per diem amount as a minimum is the same as missing a meeting, so that wouldn't hurt any of us. But the staff performed admirably. And it was downright embarrassing that we had put the Dale Carnegie stranglehold on staff, and we fell down. So I contributed this year 2 per diems. I don't know if that gets the ball rolling or not, but without a doubt, the board embarrassed itself last year, and as part of the embarrassment, and I don't want to do that again. So, we got to walk it like we talk it.
We have 4 members that I've noted that weren't able to be with us tonight. So,
oh yeah, do you want us to do it? Do you want to do it?
You look so excited, Lisa.
Why did my eyes roll?
Yeah, you look so excited as soon as Karen finished.
It's like a rainforest came down on her.
Mary?
Madam Chair, question for Brianne or Karen. If you designate something in your will or beneficiary on life or a planned gift of some sort, does that count in this campaign year?
If If I understand your question correctly, if you designate your gift to the year-end campaign, so regardless of if that's cash, check, through some form of planned gift, QCD, as long as it is going towards the year-end campaign, it goes towards the match.
Does it need to be dollars in hand? I think that's, is that what you're asking?
That's my question.
If she puts it in, if someone puts it in their will,
yeah,
would that count toward this match?
Oh, dear. That is a great question. I will get back to you.
I doubt it.
I doubt it too.
That sounds, no.
That's being
okay.
Hanged.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good question. You stumped us.
If you're planning to die this year.
I hope not.
Jeez. Grim piece of meat. God.
We've definitely.
You're upset about my diversity comment. I muttered under my breath. She wishes death.
If she's checking out.
Did not.
It will be the full docket. We'll have finance committee. We'll have quarter three financials. We'll be talking about old balances on fines and the library aware technology I just mentioned. Personnel committee will have my review, and then we'll have the full board as well. So as long as we've got everybody on yet, it is technically possible to do this format as a regular meeting. Is there a desire to do that? Now that we've been through one session with people in Cokato, what do you guys think? Is this something you'd want to continue in any way? Okay, so you wouldn't want to do it in November? Is that what I heard? Okay. We have to post it. So we would have to know if there's remote locations before the agenda goes out. And we'd have to have the technology to support it. So we have three owls currently. We have two in this room in St. Cloud, and you've got one out in Cokato. We did put in our ARPA app to buy more meeting room technology, but what we haven't figured out is you can't just run the owl. You have to have a laptop, and you have to have a way for people to view it. So you guys have the projector out there. We've got the projector in here. But if there's multiple locations, I don't know how many locations will be too many to watch on the screen. And I don't know, you know, how much time and energy it takes in setting it up out there because I wasn't in Cokato. So we can explore it. I just need to know by the time we send the agenda out where those locations might be. And if we need more than one site, we need more owls. We could also try Monticello. They have a meeting room set up there. I don't know how far of a drive that is for you, Mike. Is Monticello? I think we probably November 10th. We would mail on November 10th, so we'd probably have to know by the 8th.
Well,
for Karen. How many locations have the capability?
Okay.
Because we did a...
Right, we'll figure it out by the angels.
Okay. Okay. So we did it in Elk River for the CMLE meeting. We used one of these owls. We only have three owls.
Yep.
So I don't know. Like, right now I have us not pinned, but this is what it would look like if we had two owls. So if you add a third owl, there's another screen up there. And that's where I don't know practically how many sites you could have and still have it be a meaningful meeting. It seems like the sound's working better than I expected. But we might be able to move it. That's why I thought maybe Monticello would be more central, because Melissa lives in Monticello. It's closer to Elk River. I don't know.
Well,
was a thought.
Could we try it for a couple months and see how it works?
Yeah, as long as, yeah. It's.
I mean, this is choice or chance number one.
Yep. And this one, I felt like was a low-risk opportunity, because if they fell off, we still had a quorum and we didn't have to vote. So we weren't going to be in violation of anything if the technology didn't work. But if we end up where we don't have a quorum and the remote site's not working, it could stop us from doing business, and I don't want that to happen.
What if we just did it for the work sessions?
Yeah.
We could.
Then it wouldn't be dangerous.
I feel more comfortable with that, that we do try multiple sites or a few sites for work sessions. I offered the government center in Elk River. Mm-hmm. Plenty of rooms. We could do an owl over there. But I think for our formal meetings where there's voting, and I'm going to recommend for my last 2 months that we be in November.
November. Yeah, we should only have one. The only reason we'd have another meeting, we are meeting with the union November 1st on a benefits reopener. I don't know if we'll finish our work in time for the November board meeting. Ideally, we would, because we have open enrollment at Thanksgiving. So we might have to have a separate meeting if there's something to pass as a result. But I'm not sure exactly how that's going to look yet. So that'd be the only other reason we'd have a meeting besides the November one.
If you have another meeting, how long is the notice requirement?
It takes us about a week to get everything out.
All right.
And I think legally you have 3 days.
Legally it's 3 days.
Yeah. Legally it's 3 days, but it takes us a week to turn it around. And, like, delivering the technology is a factor. Like, we can't magically make it work. So.
Yeah, it's a bit to think through and to organize.
Yeah, so yeah.
I think for our November meeting,
Okay. All right, Mike. We're going to get to see you in person one more time for sure. All right.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes,
sir. One last question for Brianne. We're going to evaluate whether or not Razor's Edge is performing.
Yep, that is also within the...
The plan.
Within the plan, yep. The... contract ends at the end of 2022, so that is something that communications and development will be looking into and evaluating, and we would also potentially see if it would make sense to do a system that accounting could also utilize.
Right now they cannot.
We have two different systems.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, it's messy.
Okay, so... we're not happy with it at this point.
It's expensive.
I don't remember what we paid, but
it's expensive, and we're not happy with them as a vendor. I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Well, thanks for letting us go a little longer tonight.
Yes.
I think it was some good stuff. And drive safely home, everyone. And we'll see you on November 16th.